For several years, the Barnes Foundation has been flirting with bankruptcy. That's in spite of a collection of Impressionist and Post-Impressionist art valued at more than $6 billion. How the Suburban Philadelphia Foundation got that way is up for debate. This week, a judge ordered the release of an investigative audit, which the Barnes Foundation had sought to keep quiet. Joel Rose of member station WHYY reports.
The Barnes Foundation has said that to survive, it needs to move from the suburbs to downtown, it needs more curatorial flexibility, and it needs to expand its board of trustees. On the other side is Lincoln University, which says it has the law in its corner. Dr. Albert Barnes gave the historically black college the right to nominate the majority of the Barnes Foundation's board. Barnes also specified that the collection should remain at his estate in Lower Merion. The two groups are already headed to court. And Monday, the judge ordered the public release of a 2,000-page audit of the Barnes' finances and governance. The document shows more than just sloppy accounting practices, says John Anderson, author of Art Held Hostage, a new book about the Barnes.
It really piles up the evidence of allegations of very serious mismanagement at the Barnes over the decade of the 90s.
Many of the problems alleged in the audit, says Anderson, have to do with former board president Richard Glanton. The audit says there was little oversight of Glanton's actions or expenses when he was president of the Barnes. Details range from the truly worrisome, like the fact that the foundation's board apparently never approved the budgets for 1993, 94, or 96, to the merely weird, like the time Glanton allowed two women to stay rent-free in a $4,000 a month apartment owned by the Barnes. But Glanton disputes that his leadership emptied the Barnes' coffers. He says the foundation's endowment was intact when he stepped down in 1998.
When I was there, there was $11 million left, and I managed the money as if it was my mother's. We were in good shape. We had resources to manage the foundation's affairs. I obviously did not take a salary, and the overhead just ballooned out of control when I left.
Barnes Foundation CEO Kimberly Camp disputes that Glanton left the foundation in good shape. She says the foundation's endowment in 1997 was only about $4 million. The other $7 million was in a trust fund carefully controlled by the court. Moreover, Glanton's term was litigious, says Camp, and he embroiled the foundation in a series of costly lawsuits.
We're talking about over $6 million since 1992 in legal fees. There were contracts that were issued that may not have been the best contracts. Without the kind of professional leadership on the ground, decisions were being made without the best advantage of good knowledge from the field.
Kemp took over, she points out, in late 1998, after the period covered in the audit. She says the audit lends support to the argument that the Barnes' governance needs to change.
I think it really is a lesson of why it is that having a larger board for the Barnes, a board that is more independent, is an important thing. But it also, I think, is a real reminder to people that those days are long gone.
Kemp says the Barnes runs a tighter ship these days. She says the only reason the Barnes tried to keep the audit under wraps at all is that it was afraid of legal reprisal. Lincoln University pushed for the audit's publication, according to a written statement, because it wants full disclosure of the Barnes' current financial situation. In the end, says author John Anderson, the audit might end up hurting everybody.
I think it's hard to say. I think it depends on how the judge responds to it, because it's a story without a lot of heroes.
The same judge that ordered the audit's release is expected to hear the case later this year. For NPR News, I'm Joel Rose in Philadelphia.